Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bloodthirsty by William W. Johnstone and J. A. Johnstone, narrated by Cody Roberts. Chapter 1. For the most part, Joe Buckhorn was a somber man, seldom given to outward displays of emotion or flights of fancy. When folks tried to kill you fairly often, it helped to be cool-nerved and level-headed. However, when the telegram from Andrew Hayden reached him, inviting him to New Orleans for the sake of discussing a lucrative job proposal and including an offer to provide advance payment for traveling expenses, Buckhorn's reaction was to not only be interested, but actually quite excited by the prospect. New Orleans, the Crescent City, the Queen Port of the South. Buckhorn had heard many tales of the place, the exotic melting pot of so many different cultures and influences, beauty and artistry and rich heritage to be found in its finer sections, mystery and menace lying within its darker recesses. Menace was hardly a stranger to him. He'd encountered plenty of that, and a smattering of mystery, too, in his dealings throughout the Southwest Territories and along the Mexican border. Hell, it wouldn't be hard to find those who'd claimed he was pretty handy at dishing out his own brand of menace. Even though he'd grown more selective in recent years, that aspect was still generally what those who sought his services were looking to pay for. If the particulars of Hayden's job proved to be outside the boundaries of what Buckhorn was willing to hire out his gun for these days, he'd have to turn it down. Regardless, he meant to seize the opportunity to finally respond to the lure of New Orleans that had so long tugged at him, yet he'd never gotten around to answering. As he leaned on the railing of the Hannibal Bell's observation deck, Buckhorn reflected on those things and more. Many would have found him quite interesting to observe. Tall, trim, broad-shouldered, and clad in a matching suit jacket and vest over a boiled white shirt with a bold red string tie, he could have been taken for anything from a businessman or plantation owner to a riverboat gambler. Had anyone guessed the truth, of course, that he hailed from the western frontier and made his way with a gun, their intrigue would have been even greater. One thing was evident in any case: the grim lines of his complexion and set of his jaw, the deeply burned, ruddy complexion, the dark, ever-alert eyes that seemed to penetrate whatever they locked on, and the crow's wing black hair spilling from under a precisely cocked bowler hat marked him as someone not to be trifled with. For Buckhorn's part, a trip on a Mississippi River paddle-wheeler was something else he'd always wanted to experience. So, while his course from northern Texas, where Hayden's telegram had reached him, could have angled all the way down on a more direct land route, he'd opted to make a slight out-of-the-way jog to the east and catch a New Orleans-bound steamboat in Natchez. After all, what better way to arrive in the fabled city than by means of the equally fabled river providing so much of the commerce that supported and helped spread the word of her bountiful charms? As Buckhorn was thinking of New Orleans' bountiful charms, coincidentally, or maybe, it remained to be seen, not so coincidentally, a young woman possessing features equally befitting such a description appeared suddenly at the rail beside him. She looked to be in her early 20s, with glossy black hair piled high above an exquisitely lovely face and a fetchingly shapely form. Her skin, immodestly displayed by an off-the-shoulder gown and a long, elegant neck, was as smooth and milky white as porcelain. Her eyes, almond-shaped and nearly as dark as her hair, met his gaze with a directness that was borderline disconcerting. When she spoke, it was with the faintest of southern drawls. "I'm glad to find someone besides me seeking a reprieve from the cigar smoke and bluster of the lounge. When I saw you take your leave, I was hoping you weren't headed directly to your room." "Not hardly," Buckhorn replied. "This is my first time on the river, and I want to savor as much of it as I can."
"I understand that perfectly. I was practically born on the river.
but I still savor every moment around it on the occasions when I return. I especially love the evening air on the water, but aboard a boat like this, I never feel completely comfortable or safe out on deck alone.
I'd think a pretty gal like you, Buckhorn replied, would hardly have trouble finding somebody to keep her company wherever she went.
Very gallantly spoken. But surely you understand there is company, and then there is company. A young woman must always be careful about attracting the wrong kind.
Not being a pretty young gal, I guess I never looked at it that way, Buckhorn conceded.
And why would you?
The question was clearly rhetorical, and the girl quickly moved on from it.
A big, rugged-looking individual like you, I suspect you feel quite safe wherever you go. Any unwanted company that comes around, most likely you shoo away like annoying mosquitoes.
Buckhorn grinned. Big and rugged-looking, eh? In other words, rough around the edges and kinda on the homely side.
Oh, no. The girl was quick to protest. I neither said nor meant such a thing. Not at all. Anyone who knows me can tell you I'm someone who speaks her mind and always says what she means.
Those who know you, Buckhorn said. What is it they call you? The girl smiled coyly.
Why, by my name, of course. Angelique.
Angelique. Very pretty, which makes it very fitting.
Ah, more gallantry. And your name, my fellow connoisseur of fresh evening air on the river?
Joe. Joe Buckhorn.
Joe. Yes. Straightforward and basic. It suits you.
Angelique gave a faint nod of approval.
If you don't mind my saying, however, the Buckhorn part is rather unusual.
I'm mixed blood. My father was Cheyenne Indian, my mother a white woman, he explained.
How fascinating.
His mouth twisted wryly. Fascinating, maybe, but not a particularly pleasant thing to be born to. Out west, a half-breed is never really welcomed by either side. Seems like I've been fighting against one or the other most of my life.
I'm sorry I brought it up then. I had no idea.
Forget about it. Buckhorn held up a hand, stopping her. Let's just move on to something else. Like, say, you telling me about yourself.
A soft breeze lifted up off the water, carrying the smell of the river along with shoreline aromas that were foreign and intriguing to his nostrils. More captivating than any of those, however, was the subtle, musky scent of Angelique's perfume, also freshly stirred by the breeze. Gazing into those eyes, intoxicated by the rush of her perfume, he found it very tempting to let down his guard and simply lose himself in the illusion that he had this rare beauty all to himself. While he knew, despite his earlier self-deprecating remark, that some women were drawn to his powerful build and grim, hawk-like facial features, he also remained aware he was far from classically handsome, and therefore a hell of a lot more apt to cause members of the fairer sex to steer wide rather than throw themselves at him. When one did, more or less, his habit was to automatically raise his guard and hold it fast until he had a chance to determine, one way or another, what was afoot. Especially in this instance when, only a short time ago at one of the gaming tables in the lounge, where Angelique had admittedly taken note of him, he'd walked away with considerable winnings. That made it easy to suspect her interest might be more of what was contained in the money belt around his waist than anything else about him. Still, Buckhorn told himself, there were worse ways to kill some time than allowing a beautiful young woman to fawn over him, no matter her motives, as long as he kept a sharp eye peeled in case her scheme included an accomplice showing up to put a knife to his throat or bounce a club off the back of his head. In addition to the alertness that was second nature to him, Buckhorn was hardly unarmed. In deference to the setting, he did not have his usual .45 caliber Colt Peacemaker holstered on his right hip,
but he was carrying a smaller, lighter Colt Lightning tucked behind his belt to the small of his back, and under the fall of his suit coat. Sheathed inside his right boot was a Bowie knife with a 10-inch blade. In response to his query, Angelique was saying,
"I fear there's not very much interesting to tell about little old me. You are easy to talk to, though. I feel very comfortable around you, so I'm sure we could find lots else to converse about. Together."
She wrapped her arms around her bare shoulders and gave a little shiver.
"On second thought, I don't know that out here in the evening air is the best place after all. It's growing chilly, and I don't even have a shawl."
Buckhorn began unbuttoning his suit jacket. "By all means, let me..."
"That's not necessary."
She put a hand on his arm, stopping him.
"Really, I think a far more sensible thing for us to do would be simply to retire to my cabin. It's one level down, almost directly below where we happen to be standing. We could continue our talk there, and if you need further persuasion, let me say that I have a fine vintage of wine on hand. In the lounge, I noticed that your preferred drink was wine."
The lady was very observant, Buckhorn told himself. If his suspicions weren't so fully aroused, he would find that quite flattering. He tried amending his thoughts to consider the possibility his suspicions might not be warranted after all, but fell short of successfully buying it. All of this felt too much like a setup. In the event it wasn't, he'd just have to make sure such a discovery didn't diminish the pleasure of spending time with the lovely Angelique under more desirable circumstances.
"I have to admit, a glass of good wine always makes a tempting offer," Buckhorn said. "Not that spending time in your company really needs any added incentive, but from your standpoint, are you sure that having me in your cabin is really a good idea?"
"Whatever do you mean?"
He cleared his throat.
"Well, not being sure of your station or status, ma'am, I can't help but wonder if an unescorted young woman keeping company with a fella like me might not be looked on by other folks as..."
"Oh, hang other folks and their dirty minds if it comes to that. We're two adults who have paid the asking fare for transport on this vessel, and have conducted ourselves quite properly ever since coming aboard. A lot more properly than some of the lecherous old goats down in the lounge, I assure you. If we choose to spend some time together, whenever and wherever we please, I might add, then it's nobody else's damn business."
It was quite a speech, and Buckhorn couldn't find a thing about the words that he didn't agree with. Damn, he wanted to like this gal, and wanted her to not be what he suspected her of being. But her ploy of so boldly attempting to lure him down to her cabin was yet another sign that she almost certainly was up to no good. He could actually see the scene in his mind's eye. She would usher him into the room ahead of her, where there was sure to be no interruptions by someone unexpected happening by, and where the shadows would be nice and deep. Before she got the lamps turned up, Mr. Accomplice would step out of the shadows and take care of Buckhorn before he realized he'd been suckered. As soon as he'd been relieved of his winnings and everything else of value, over the side he'd go, maybe already dead, maybe just close enough it would be easy for the river to finish the job. And then Angelique and her partner would move on to start trolling for their next victim.
"Well, Mr. Buckhorn," Angelique said,
with a trace of tartness in her voice that hadn't been there before,
"are you interested in joining me for a glass of that wine? Or are you perhaps one who finds it too forward of me to be extending such an invitation?"
He smiled down at her.
"Lady, if you're being too forward, that only means there are way too many other women in this old world who are too damn backwards."
She returned his smile, though hers was far more dazzling. Moving closer to him, she said,
"I was hoping that's how you'd feel."
Chapter 2
Buckhorn was so convinced the actual physical attack on him wouldn't come until after they'd reached Angelique's room, he damn near missed the attempt to brain him right where he stood. The split-second warning came from a flickering reflection on the glass housing around a lantern fastened to a deck post, rising just above Angelique's pile of hair. It revealed a burly gent looming directly behind him, with one arm raised and a bulging sap gripped in his fist. It was all that saved him from getting his skull busted open like a peanut shell. He reacted by thrusting Angelique away and letting his knees buckle in unison, so he dropped suddenly, squatting down as low as he could. The sap slashed through the air above him, at the exact level his head had been only a moment earlier. The empty swing made a great whoosh, and the man behind it grunted with the vicious effort he put into it. Swinging so fiercely and not connecting with anything, pulled the would-be head-crusher off balance, and caused him to stagger as he attempted to regain it. Buckhorn was determined to have a say about that. Staying in his squat long enough to twist around toward the man, he straightened his legs with a hard thrust, exploding upward faster than he dropped down. As he shot to his full height, Buckhorn slammed the top of his head up and under the sapper's chin. The man's teeth clattered together loudly, and he emitted a desperate gagging sound as his head snapped back. Adding to that, Buckhorn drilled an in-close right hook hard to the sapper's unprotected ribs. The victim howled in added pain. Buckhorn liked the sound and feel of what he'd done so much that he immediately repeated it. The man lurched away, trying to separate himself from Buckhorn. He staggered sideways, blood streaming from his smashed mouth as he hunched over to protect his battered ribs. Taking advantage of the opening, Buckhorn threw a high left cross to the side of the sapper's throat. The punch knocked the man back, slamming him hard against the deck railing. His knees sagged. Buckhorn overestimated the damage he'd done. He stayed close, cocking his right fist, meaning to bring it up from knee level and deliver another smashing uppercut. But when his fist started to rise, the man on the rail pushed forward to meet him. At the same time, he chopped down savagely with the sap. The weapon scored only a glancing blow on Buckhorn's forearm. It didn't break bone, yet landed solidly enough to stop the momentum of the intended punch and sent streaks of fiery hot numbness all the way up to Buckhorn's shoulder. Buckhorn backpedaled, grabbing the injured arm with his left hand. He clamped it tight, rubbing frantically, trying to get some feeling to return as his opponent took a moment to recover. "You've got him now, Henry," Angelique shouted, encouraging the sapper. "Hurry up and finish him, but be careful. He's quick and dangerous." "Not to mention a great conversationalist," Buckhorn muttered through clenched teeth. "Did you forget that part, darling?" The gleaming blade of a short but wickedly pointed punch dagger appeared in Angelique's delicate hand. Her luscious lips peeled back in an ugly way. "Come near enough for the embrace you are so hungry for, you pathetic fool, and the bite of my fang will sever your vocal cords so no one has to be subjected to your dull babbling ever again."
"Tempting as the offer is," Buckhorn replied, "your pet ape Henry got in the request for this dance first. Be plumb rude of me to all of a sudden give him the cold shoulder in favor of you. The things that will very soon be cold," growled Henry in a faint French accent coming through puffs of labored breathing, "will be your dead flesh once I have broken you in two." "That's gonna be mighty hard to do after I split you from Adam's apple to belly button, and your hands are busy trying to keep your guts from boiling out all over the deck." As he said this, Buckhorn crouched ever so slightly, just long enough for his hand to streak down and pull the bowie knife from its boot sheath under the cuff of his trousers. He could have gone for the gun under his coat, but since no other guns were in play, the bowie seemed adequate and more appropriate. He held the weapon out in front of him in a practiced knife fighter's pose, gripping it in his still tingling right hand. His eyes gleamed almost as bright as the reflections playing up and down the 10-inch blade, and the harder he squeezed the handle, the more the tingling abated,
as if his hand and arm were drawing recuperative strength from the bowie. Henry's eyes grew wide with alarm as he watched the knife.
"Do not hesitate. We can still take him, Henry,"
Angelique urged her man.
"Engage him but for a second, and I will strike from my side, opening his carotid artery with a lightning thrust of my own blade."
"She talks a good story, big boy," Buckhorn said, taunting. "You willing to bet your life on her doing what she says she can do? Because I guarantee you, I can do what I say."
Buckhorn's taunting and the urging of the girl propelled Henry into reckless action. He lunged forward, wielding the sap skillfully, slashing down at Buckhorn's knife hand, aiming to break his wrist and disarm him. The attack came so fast, Buckhorn scarcely had time to jerk his hand out of the way. Instead of letting the empty swing unbalance him, Henry was prepared and held his momentum in check. Not only that, he instantly course-corrected and brought the sap upward in a follow-up sweep, a wide-reaching backhand aimed at Buckhorn's head. Buckhorn pulled his head and shoulders away, again at the last second, in order to avoid getting his skull caved in. Though Henry had once again maintained his balance, the extended swing of his arm had, just for an instant, left the whole front of him totally exposed. An instant was all Buckhorn needed. He snapped forward and hurled himself straight into Henry's bulky body. As their chests thudded momentarily together and then bounced apart, Buckhorn sank his bowie deep into Henry's gut, just above his belt buckle, and began ripping the razor-edged blade upward. Buckhorn silenced Henry's scream with another headbutt, continuing to drive forward. He rammed Henry once more to the rail. Pulling his knife free at the last moment and giving a final shove with his free hand, he sent the carved-open sapper up and over, and down into the black nighttime water of the Mississippi. But that wasn't the end of it. True to her word, Angelique proved willing to play a more direct part in the attack. With a screech of,
"You murderous bastard!"
she launched herself at Buckhorn like a she-devil. Leaping full onto his back, she wrapped her shapely legs about his middle and hooked one surprisingly strong arm under his chin. With a hand clutching the punch dagger, she began fiercely slashing and stabbing. Caught off guard though he was, Buckhorn managed to thrash and jerk his upper body from side to side, even as he staggered somewhat under her slight weight. Once, twice, the dagger sank into flesh, but his frantic gyrations were enough to throw off her aim, causing the glittering blade to bite into his shoulder rather than the side of his throat. Finally, with a desperate shrug, he dislodged the wildcat from his back and sent her sprawling onto the deck. She sprang instantly back to her feet, with her once beautiful face distorted with rage. She rushed him again with undiminished fury. Buckhorn blocked her dagger thrust, his forearm slamming upward and outward against hers, knocking it wide. Then he swung his arm in a left-to-right backhand that crashed the side of the fist holding the bowie against her jaw. The powerful blow spun her around and pitched her face down to the deck. An odd bleating sound came from her. Buckhorn took a step toward her, but stopped short as she pushed herself to her feet and turned toward him. The dagger she had been holding was buried in her throat. Her eyes bugged wide with disbelief and pain. In the space of a single blink, the luster was suddenly gone from her eyes, replaced by a flat dullness. She was dead even as her body started to crumple. Buckhorn grabbed her before she could collapse all the way. He held her upright for a long moment, but was unable to meet her dull, unseeing gaze. She had brought her death on herself, but it still bothered him. For most of his life, such a turn of events wouldn't have caused him to blink. He would have figured she had it coming for trying to rob and murder him. In recent months, he had changed, trying to live more like a normal human being instead of a cold-blooded hired gun.
That meant having some sympathy for other folks, even when they were to blame for their own problems. On the other hand, since he'd killed Henry in self-defense and Angelique's death had been an accident, and since he had a potentially lucrative job offer waiting for him and didn't want to get tied up with the law, he lifted her higher, whirled her in a half-turn, and flung her corpse out beyond the railing and listened to it splash into a watery grave. No point in going overboard, so to speak, with the business of being a decent human being. In his cabin, Buckhorn stripped off his blood-spattered clothes, scrubbed his hands like he was trying to rub the skin off, then refilled the wash basin with cold, fresh water, and scooped repeated handfuls to his face. He dried off, donned some clean pants, and sat on the edge of the bed to tend to the dagger punctures to his shoulder. Inasmuch as it was the shoulder to his gun arm, he had more than a little concern for the degree of injury done. Far more important than the minimal bleeding was whether serious damage had been done. He quickly cleaned off the blood, bandaged the shoulder, and donned a clean shirt. As far as he could tell, there was no serious muscle or joint damage. He'd no doubt have some stiffness of movement for a while, but as long as it didn't last more than a few days, he should be all right. The whole incident troubled him some, yet given the same set of circumstances all over again, he couldn't see himself doing any different. A hardness, a savageness, had been deeply ingrained in him a long time ago. When somebody harmed or threatened him, he retaliated with a fierce finality that put the matter forever to rest. It was a way of survival, and it meant not having to look over his shoulder for ghosts of unresolved conflicts seeking retribution. Angelique and Henry had meant to kill him, so he'd needed to stop them. It was really as simple as that. The fact that Angelique was a lovely female was unfortunate, but that was all. His decision to quickly distance himself from the bloodied scene, when he heard fast-approaching footsteps and rumbling voices of those who'd been drawn by the sounds of the fatal scuffle, and its accompanying curses, howls, and shrieks, hadn't been a hard one to make. Luck had been with him. By ducking and dodging any encounters with other passengers or crew members who surely would have balked at his gore-streaked attire, he'd made it safely back to his cabin. A contingent of men led by the Hannibal Bell's first mate came knocking on his door a while later, inquiring, as they were of all passengers, if he'd heard or seen anything that might be related to signs of violence found up on the observation deck. He put on a shocked and apologetic act of having nothing to offer. After they were gone, Buckhorn's thoughts returned to the woman's death. In his early years as a hired gun, he'd taken on jobs strictly for money. The often harsh duties he was required to perform were of little consequence to him. Growing up a half-breed, the abuse he'd endured from both sides of his bloodline had made him bitter and dispassionate, devoid of feelings for the misfortune of anyone placed in his path. But then he experienced a failed, tragic love affair, and a brush with his own mortality. He'd emerged from those with a new perspective on things, most especially on the kind of man he was. He didn't like what he saw. While he figured it was probably too late for redemption, he made up his mind to nevertheless try. Since gun work was the only trade he knew, he continued to pursue it, but with a vow that he would not kill indiscriminately, and would only hire out his gun to those who were on the right side of a situation. That brought him back to his conviction that Angelique and Henry had certainly been on the wrong side of the situation. He had no compunction at all about killing Henry, and while his head told him there was no difference between the sap artist and the beautiful young woman and her dagger, a knot somewhere deep in his gut wasn't quite ready to unclench over that part. As he wrestled with those feelings, he worked his arm from side to side, now and then rolling the shoulder, testing the tightness already starting to form there. It wasn't a big worry, not yet. It was to be expected. He made up his mind that the shoulder would loosen back up just fine, and so would the knot in his gut. Chapter 3.
When the Hannibal Bell docked in New Orleans, Buckhorn was ready to have his riverboat experience over with.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?